Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Live to see it, friends, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-author, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, I am great. I'm great. Glad to be having another amazing Wednesday program.
New space. Hey, have we lined up the amazing this way, this week, huh?
That's all right.
I called this show New Space Race plus pizza delivering and tax-paying robots. Okay,
that's right.
So I would have given it more title, but that's about all you can fit in a blog talk radio title field. So I feel like we're delivering on all cylinders here. And let's not waste any time. Let's jump into the amazing. What do you say? Uber CEO predicts humanoid robots will deliver pizza. AI chatbots will be in self-driving cars. This was so cool. And I don't know why this one didn't plaster my Facebook. We're gonna talk on Friday about the stories that just show up over and over and over again in my news feed on Facebook, and we'll compare with yours. But this is one that I would have expected, and I haven't seen it. I had to find it myself. I was out browsing, and I was like, "Well, this is huge. Why hasn't this one been repeated?" Because I love this idea. Basically, you got the CEO of Uber, and he's talking about one of the big problems of a self-driving pizza delivery, which is the car gets to your house, but we've got that last couple hundred feet. We've got how do you get the pizza from the car to the door? Now, one solution to that, of course, is that you have a drone, and that the drone is going to fly right up to your house, or maybe it's going to drop it into a box, and then you have to go out. And, of course, he says you could go out to the car.
Delivery van. Yeah.
You could go out to the car, but currently we get better service than that. Currently, somebody comes up to your door. And if you're, as he points out, home with kids or whatever, maybe you don't want to walk out. Maybe you don't walk out in the rain and get a pizza from a car or pick it up from a box. So there's only one possible solution, Stephen, don't you think?
Some guy with a robot. And I think, Uber CEO predicts a humanoid robot walking it up to the door. I don't know if that's necessarily the most efficient way. I don't know necessarily that you have to have a CMO or one of his kin walking the pizza up there. I think it might be easier to have the drone fly it from the back and forth from the pizza delivery van. And it could, this particular delivery thing could have multiple drones that are flying pizzas to various houses in the neighborhood and meeting up with the mothership pizza delivery truck, right?
Right.
And that could be happening all the time. So, and then plugging in and recharging for the next delivery. That could be happening. So, it could be something like that, or it could be something mounted on a what looks like a Segway or something. Wheels.
I think the drone idea is pretty good because you don't then need a robot that has to cover all these different kinds of terrain, climb stairs, all that kind of stuff. Now, if you're in an apartment, there's still a problem. Because a pizza guy can come to the door, can ring the bell, say pizza, and then you can buzz him in, and then he comes up and gives you your pizza if you live in an apartment. If it's a human driver, you can do that. Hard to do that with either a drone. I guess it's not hard to do it with a robot. It just, you have to have a pretty sophisticated robot to do that. That is a...
You could even get into a gate. I mean, what if the house is gated? You know, you don't even have to be buzzed in. The drone flies right over the gate, drops the pizza at the front door, rings the doorbell, and is back at the truck. To me, the drone just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I don't think it could just drop it, though. I think the drone has to wait until you come out and you enter a code or something, and then it releases the pizza to you. Otherwise, there's a risk of, you know, somebody else getting the pizza, it dropping it at the wrong house. You know, there's all that kind of, I don't know.
Workout, isn't it? But,
yeah, there's process management issues around robot delivery. I have to say, though, if there were robots a la Mr. Data from Star Trek, he would make an outstanding pizza delivery guy. Okay, it would be arguably there are better applications for Data. I'm not going to say that there aren't. You know, chief science officer on a starship comes to mind. But he'd be a very good pizza delivery guy. He's very smart. He would stand there. He'd ring the bell. You know, he'd come up. He'd be real polite. It would be awesome. I think it's a great idea. I just think it's overkill technology.
He could also jump over the gate. He could jump over the fence. I mean,
he could jump over the gate.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah.
Well, actually, I don't know how to. Yeah, how does the Domino's guy get into a gated community? They just see the thing and let him in.
There's going to have to be a code. You know, you have to give the Domino's guy your code.
Yeah, or something.
Or something. You know, or ring him in somehow. But yeah. this could bypass some of those issues. So, yeah, my vote is drone. I just think that would work out.
Although I can picture gated communities having all kinds of rules about drones and having all kinds of preventative measures around drones. I don't know. See, here I thought we had a cut and dried wonderful story, and we've just opened up a whole Pandora's box. We were saying yesterday that we could do every show about human hacking. I bet we could do every show about how in the world are we going to deliver pizzas in the future? Okay, and
or at least drones are you know robots in general.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, I want to get specific. You know, wouldn't that be awesome? A daily podcast discussing how pizzas are going to be delivered in the future. I feel like that
surely,
would be really...
Surely we'd run out of stuff to talk about. This, but...
I never would. Not in a million years. But that would be really tapping the potential of the internet right there, I think. It's finally, you know, paying off on all this potential. Yeah, two guys spending an hour a day talking about how pizzas will be delivered. Especially if it just went on for years and by then... The solutions were already implemented. You know, we're still working on it, though. Well, if you had something like the Lost in Space robot, okay, because he's got those hooks. Anyway, all right. This has turned into another geek thing. We gotta move quickly away. What's our next amazing story?
Well, Trump administration investigating the large scale development of space with private companies, SpaceX and Blue Origin, being likely winners in this. And I want to be bipartisan for a moment and just say that the Obama years were not bad times for commercial space either, were they, Bill?
No, no. He kind of set the stage for Trump here, in fact.
Exactly. By
kind of moving things in that direction.
Right. So if you're on the left and want to oppose everything that Trump's doing, perhaps lighten up on this one aspect, perhaps. You continue to march all you like on other issues, but on this, if he's coming out in favor of SpaceX and Blue Origin, I think that's not a bad thing, and it should be applauded. I suppose you saw over the weekend that SpaceX made another successful launch. It was on Sunday. Phil, and they launched for the space station and successfully recovered the launch vehicle out at sea on their platform. So that's just awesome that they can do that. They had to scrub one on Saturday. My kids and I were watching on Saturday for the countdown and everything, and I think they reached about 2 minutes on the countdown or something like that and had to scrub. They didn't like something that they were seeing. There's some issue.
Right.
They were not able to work out. And so the next launch window was on Sunday morning, and they made that one. So that's incredible. A private company doing orbital spaceflight. That is not an easy thing, and they're delivering to the space station. You
it's
have
huge.
To have it down to the minute. You have to.
It's
have
huge,
your
and it's
down.
Interesting to see on Facebook when people are watching this live, and you think back when we used to watch NASA missions live, and you know, still do, I suppose, if you know where to go to look for them. But back when that used to be this big shared experience on network television, decades ago. Now, the shared experience is watching a private company do some of those same kinds of things. People were watching when the first man was sent into space, when the first man was sent into orbit, et cetera. And those were big news stories, big shared experiences, and it was all this national U.S. government-funded project. And now it's this one company doing this stuff.
Yeah.
And when you tune in, you're just kind of watching what one company does. And that shift of models is so big. But one of the things I found really interesting about this is that Trump is kind of playing the two models off each other, that he doesn't mind having there be some competition between what they're calling old space and new space, that NASA and the traditional contractors who develop technology for them, that's old space. Let them come up with what they can come up with. Let them deliver what they can deliver. And new space, Blue Origin and SpaceX and others that are probably going to be coming along, let them develop what they're good at. And if there's overlap, if there's crossover, let them compete. Let them compete with each other. It seems like everybody gets better in that model. Rather than just saying old model bad, new model good, it's we'll take the best of everything. That just seems like a really good approach to me.
To some extent, it's just throwing everything against the wall and seeing what sticks.
Yeah.
But there's wisdom in that, I think, because if one model is just not working out, and let's say old space just falls away and NASA becomes something like the FAA for spaceflight, hey, that's not a bad future, is it?
No.
But provided that we continue to push into space and the future becomes something awesome because we're going to Mars, we're going further, and we're doing it with private businesses, and we're doing it to stay because we can make money there. That's awesome. But anyway, yeah, I wanted also to mention the fact of where this launch on Sunday happened. Were you aware, Phil, that this was at Pad 39A, the historic launch pad of Apollo launches and everything? SpaceX is making a big deal out of the fact that, hey, we're the guys now. You know, we're launching from the same place that all the Apollo missions took off from. We're leading the way now. We're the big dogs. They're trying.
I had heard that, and I think it's extremely cool. I think it's wonderful. That they're launching from there. I want to see manned missions launched from there. I want to see a mission from the moon launched from there. That would be so sweet, and maybe not that far off. We've heard talk of a return. In fact, this story talks about a return to the moon by 2020, potentially. Construction of privately operated space stations and the redirection of NASA's mission to large-scale economic development of space. It could all start happening here real soon. You know, 2020 is 3 years from now.
That's no time at all.
I mean,
we choose to go to the moon in 3 years. Okay. All right. Okay. Let's get up to speed and do it, man. We're not even giving ourselves a decade, are we?
I mean, that's the way it should work. When Kennedy said that, he gave himself 10 years because we had never even sent anybody in space.
Right.
We had 10 years seemed like a pretty good cushion, and we beat the 10 years. But today,
barely.
We got rockets.
Yeah.
We've been to the moon. We've done all this. It shouldn't take 20 years. It shouldn't take 40 years. It should take about 3 years to put a program like that together.
I'll tell you, if we had a serious reason for going to the moon right now, if there was, you know, $1 billion check sitting on the moon for somebody to go pick up, okay?
Right.
You know, somebody be there picking it up in 6 months. I'm telling you, Phil, if there was a compelling reason to get to the moon and get there quickly, we could be there. It's not.
You'd probably have to spend $900 million to get there and back, but still, you'd get
that billion-dollar check.
You'd clear $100 million, you know.
Yeah, and get to be the company that went to the moon, right? So
that's right. Yeah. it's true, though. If there was some reason, if the alien said, look, we've planted an explosive device on the moon, it's going to destroy your whole planet, it's going to go off in 6 months, we'd be there in 3 months, right?
Yeah.
You can easily defuse it, but you got to go there yourselves. Bye. Be like, boy, psycho aliens, okay, but we'd have to deal with it, you know?
he would look exactly like Marvin the Martian, that particular alien, you know?
He would.
But, yeah, we could get to the moon quickly if we had a compelling reason to get there. But three years is still quick, and I'd love to see it happen. I have no memory of us being on going to the moon, because I was born the year that we went to the moon, Phil. Mm. And by the time I was old enough to appreciate the space race, you know, it was pretty much over. Apollo was pretty much over. I do recall Skylab.
That's right. Yeah.
But that's about the extent.
Interesting
of
kind of shadow
memory.
Program after yeah. Apollo. Yeah.
That's about.
At least
it.
They used the big
you,
rockets.
You remember? You remember? You have. You're just a few years older than me. You remember some of the later missions, I'm sure.
No, I remember. I remember Neil Armstrong. I remember watching
really?
That with my
okay.
yeah with my family on TV. What you know? What I remember most about it is I was 7 years old. How hard it was to see what was going on. You know, it was this
yeah.
fuzzy satellite transmission from the moon, and I'm like, is that his helmet? Is that a man? But I do remember seeing it, and it was an exciting time, because it was like, well, here's, you know, I'm a kid, and here's this thing that's never been done before in the history of humanity, and we're just at the beginning, just at
yeah.
the beginning. You know, and now 50 years later, more or less, we've really not done much more than go to the moon. I mean, we've done a lot of things, but in terms of shooting farther out into space or having a permanent settlement there or any of that kind of stuff, we've not done it. And that's
yeah.
why this is exciting. It's like, okay, well, let's get caught up, and we can get back to the moon in no time because technology has developed and we've already done it. And let's move on to some of these other things. Let's privatize space. Let's have. I love the idea of commercial space stations. I think that's awesome. Go ahead.
Yeah. There were some prerequisite technologies that we really probably should have had before going to the moon, but we pushed forward without them. Yeah.
Like computers, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you had guys literally using, and it mostly was guys back then, right? Guys mostly, they were using slide rules and mission control. I'm not even joking. It was a steampunk program if ever we've had anything like that. It was
yeah.
they were doing stuff far beyond what the technology should have allowed, but we were doing it because we felt compelled to do it. Our compelling reason to go at that point was beating the Soviets, and we did. We chose our finish line well. We said, you know, the heck with you guys going into orbit and all that. That's child's play. We're going to the moon, and we set that as the finish line, and we beat them to the moon, and that was the end of that. We won the space race because of it. So,
and our space program kind of fizzled after that, or
yeah.
went along
we
in a kind of limping
it, we
way.
We lacked a compelling goal after.
After that, yeah, because we had set that as a goal. So here, when you start talking about some of these newer goals, and by the way, before we get too far from it, it was mostly guys, but hidden figures. Okay, there were women, there were black women. Okay, we don't want to forget anybody who contributed. There were some amazing people behind the scenes doing this with flight rules.
I didn't mean anything by that. Of course, I'm saying nowadays it's not just guys.
Yeah, exactly.
And back then it wasn't either, but. The faces on the program were white guys back then, and now it's now we're a lot more diverse in our efforts.
Absolutely.
So that's not a bad thing, is it?
It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. I'm super psyched about a rapid and affordable return to the moon and privately operated space stations. I really hope that the president pushes ahead with some of these initiatives. I think this trade-off, this tension between old space and new space, could be exactly the way to do it. It's big. And it's bold, and it's just exactly the kind of thinking we need. We need to get back some of that JFK-style new frontier, you know, the future is ahead of us and wonderful things are going to happen attitude in this country. And maybe that would be one way to get some of that back. I'd like to think so.
The sky is no longer the limit. Let's just go for it, right?
Pan Am, that's right. Yeah, okay. Right. Hey, how about this next story? Bill Gates says the robot that takes your job should pay taxes. Now, thank you, Bill Gates, for catching up with us, because we've been talking about taxing the machines for at least 10 years. And, of course, we didn't come up with the idea. John Smart introduced that idea to us. And I think he was repeating it from someone else too. So not to say that.
Well, but when Bill says it, then people are going to listen. And I think this is fantastic that he is saying it, because. Well, what do you think, Phil? We talked last week about something other than universal basic income, right? If a robot that takes your job pays taxes, does that go to pay for universal basic income? Or maybe it could be what we talked about with Brian Wong last week, right? Maybe it's paying universal basic power.
Right. Maybe there's some universal basic infrastructure. Yeah. Maybe UBI should be universal basic infrastructure rather than universal basic income that could be supported. And part of that infrastructure might be power. Part of it might be the means of production. That was one of the comments that somebody left over on, I think, techno-optimism. They said what we need is universal means of production, and I think that might be true. The thing is, however that works, however that pans out, whatever that turns into, how do you fund that? Where does that money come from? Well, traditionally you would fund it at least in part through government programs, which would come derived from taxation. But the thing is, if robots are putting everybody out of work, where does the money come from to generate those taxes? And Gates says, well, it's very simple. You got to tax the robots.
Absolutely, you got to. If you're no longer working, and therefore you can't pay taxes as an income, it's got to come from the things that are making income. The entities that make income at that point are the entities that have robots, so they get taxed. The corporations get taxed, and I don't see a way around that.
Okay, so here's where I kind of see this scenario that Gates is coming up with breaking down a little bit, because what I'm seeing from him is a model where we're taking people out of the workforce because robots are taking their jobs. We're putting them into positions that are more human-centric. That's great. Making teachers out of them, making caregivers out of them, something like that. He says, how do we pay for that? Well, we tax the machines. And I think that's true anyway. As we've said, you have to tax the machines if you're going to keep the system afloat. If the revenue that we used to rely on from taxpayers is going to be available, it's going to have to come from the robots that replace them. Where I feel that his model isn't quite capturing everything that's happening is it seems to me that he's describing a future scenario where we've got these, like, the Uber CEO's humanoid robots, right? His pizza delivery robots doing construction jobs, right? He seems to be talking about a world where there, you know, a human has been doing a very physical kind of a job, and now a robot comes in and takes it over. But really, where are the robots taking jobs away? I think the word robot is throwing us off a little bit, right? Because what if you look at present day Microsoft, where they probably hire a lot fewer developers per project than they used to, because so much of the software engineering is automated, right? And if you look at companies, we've talked about this many times, how Google, Apple, Facebook, some of these biggest companies in the world hire very few people. Why? Because so much of what they do is automated.
Right.
And wouldn't they be required to pay a huge robot tax because of all the headcount that they should have that they don't have? It seems to me if you don't incorporate that piece of it, what he's saying doesn't really amount to much.
Well, it just comes down to a huge corporate income tax, I guess, which we kind of already have in the United States. Our corporate income taxes are higher than most other countries. But I guess it's going to have to be higher still the more and more automated they get. And quite frankly, they're going to be able to afford it because they're making more money because they have a smaller human footprint to deal with, right? So,
But what you would need is some kind of realistic assessment of how much of that corporate income is coming from automation. Because if you've got a big company that's employing lots and lots of people, you'd be paying at a different rate. You don't have the robots there to tax. I mean, you'd still be paying your corporate. So it's not just a flat, straight up increase in corporate income tax. It's a very specific tax on the companies that are best leveraging automation. Those are the ones that you.
Well, I don't know if there's a good way to do it, because, you know, we've mentioned this a couple of times, Phil, that it's, you know, let's say that my town can support, you know, 10 people that do what I do. Okay. And it's not going to be a single machine that comes along and like puts me out of work, right? The way we kind of talked about this on a program, I think it was probably a couple of weeks ago, is that there are, you know, 100 things that my job requires me to do, and 2 or 3 of them get automated every year. 2 or 3 of these tasks that I used to do in my job get automated every year, and so now all of a sudden, instead of my town supporting 10 of people that do what I do, now they can only support really 9. Because,
right.
And the amount of work that's left to do that hasn't been automated away is decreasing every single year. And then 4 or 5 years, maybe only five people can do what I do in my town, because it's just less and less automated, non-automated work that's required for the people who do what I do, let's say. And so you can never point to a single machine and say, that stupid machine got my job. You can't, because it's just, it happens, it happens behind the scenes, and you don't really see it happening. And
if you look at how you tax an organization, right? If you talk about taxing the machines, I guess I'm saying that a typical successful law firm that's still employing a lot of humans would pay a different tax rate, different corporate tax rate, than, say, LegalZoom, right? Which has pulled as many humans as it possibly can out of the system, right? That wherever the business is built on automating human labor, on taking humans out of the process and replacing it with machine labor, that's where you would incur that tax. And I'm not sure that there's a perfect way to do that, but it would certainly be less than optimal to just set all corporate taxes sky high, because then the only companies that could afford them anyway would be the ones that are, it seems like that would create a spiral, right? It would cycle it so that it would rush the takeover of the robots almost.
Law firms are often considered, you know, one of the areas that are sort of, you know, technological backwaters. You know, they haven't changed much over the years. You know, automation hadn't touched them all that much. Well, here's the thing. In the 80s, my father was about my age and doing about as much business as I do. And he had at that time 5 or 6 assistants to do the level of work that he did. Okay, that's how many assistants that he required. He kept them all hopping all the time. And I'm as busy now as he was then,
mm-hmm.
and I have two. I have two
right.
assistants, and my brother is as well, and he also has two. And really, the only reason we have two is because he's covering two offices and I'm covering two offices, and we have to have a warm body in an office, right?
Right.
It's automation really has hit the legal community too, so. I mean,
you guys would pay more. I'm not saying you wouldn't. I'm saying that you wouldn't pay as much as LegalZoom, right? That's the point.
No, those guys, they're all automation. And then, of course, Google is 100% automation practically,
yeah.
right?
So, maybe the corporate tax rate would actually have to be reset. They do some kind of model based on, like, 1979, right? What would this business look like in 1979? It'd be really fun to apply
it.
It
could be done at all. That's the problem. You know, most of the businesses are just not possible.
Yeah.
It would not have been possible for my dad to do what I'm doing.
And right.
He couldn't cover two offices.
But you can do a rough comparison and say you're covering as many cases and you're doing it with two assistants. And say in 1979, right, he was covering the same number of cases but with 6 assistants, right? Some formula like that could be put in place to tax the machine. So, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry, Stephen, your tax rates are going up, but that's all there is to it.
I guess so.
Either that or you got to hire some assistants. I don't know.
I guess so. I mean, and hey, you know what? That might be a way to – to sort of a backwater to encourage people to hire, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you'll hire a few more people,
hire humans, and you get a tax break. That's right.
You get a tax break.
Do it all with machines, and you pay through the nose. Actually, we got to revisit this. This sounds like something that, I don't know, there could be something there. Well, listen, we're just about to wrap up the show, but I'm sorry to give you the bad news on your taxes, Stephen, but I want to give you some good news before we close.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard, but McDonald's has re-engineered the drinking straw using the Fibonacci formula. Okay, we've talked about the Fibonacci model before, to let you enjoy your Shamrock Shake more. Now, I'm sure you like a Shamrock Shake as much as the next guy. It's a limited-time thing, right?
Who doesn't, right?
Green
but
shakes.
But you know what? I was thinking the last time I was having one that, you know what? There's just not enough mint here. You know, I mean, I'm not, it's just too much chocolate, not enough mint. I got to have it. It's got to be fed to me by way of the Fibonacci formula.
And yeah, how can we get the mix of mint and chocolate right? Well, just follow the link, folks, and you'll see that McDonald's has engineers, top people working on this. And this is the glorious kind of work that becomes available. This is what gets freed up, the creative potential that gets freed up once the robots start doing all the grunt work for us, okay? So we're talking about a straw that delivers the perfect mix of chocolate and mint in your Shamrock Shake. And I don't know, this is, you know, we're a month out from St. Patrick's Day, but I am super psyched already based on this story.
I'm definitely going to have to order one and check it. Hopefully, you know, these straws. I'm not getting the feeling that these straws will be in every single one of their Shamrock Shakes, but I'm hopeful that I'm gonna definitely have to order one and see if it's got a special straw.
One day, if not this year, but some St. Patrick's Day from now, you're gonna have that perfect shake. I'm looking forward to that. And you know what, Stephen? When you do, it's gonna be amazing. All right. Well, that's gonna do
that's
it for this Wednesday. We're gonna be back on Friday with another one of our special all Elon Musk shows, plus other geeks. So that's going to be fun. Hope you'll all be able to join us for that. Stephen, great talking with you. Great being with you all. And until next time, live to see it.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.